You have before you a picture of Joppa. That is this area right in here, and then Tel Aviv in the distance, which is the largest and the official capital city of Israel there, as you see, is really quite modern, in every way is a, you know, a city of our times. The peninsula there, you really can't call it that, it's just kind of a bump in the coastline, that exists to this day, is really a great little picturesque area, though, because it does allow you, you know, a view up and down the coast of Israel in two directions. In both directions, this little bump sticks out, allows you to see both north and south. As we go through the pictures this evening, talking about this particular city, I wanted to show you this particular photo with the trees right here. You can tell that there's more grass and whatnot in shade down there as well. That really is the old city of Joppa itself. And so we've got more modern buildings here, though some of them are fairly old, over 100 years. But it's this area right on the very top of the hill that was the old city itself. And so if you look very carefully there in the left-hand corner, you see just a little bit of the breakwater. So the entrance to the port itself is in that area. It has been a seaport from very ancient times because it is, for quite a few miles, the only bump on the coastline. The only thing that gives you a little bit of shelter then, as we'll see in some succeeding pictures. I want to rebuke Ron, and what a failure he is, to not be able to find any songs about Joppa. Every song that any child has ever sung about Jonah involves Joppa. Good, pick anyway. I'll let you laugh here, so I knew it was really one of our children's songbooks, I guess. I am going to zoom in just a little bit on that very same picture right there, though, and wanted to point out that I broke my record today, and my encouraging people to go to Israel, it just changes your whole life. I now have 8 people that are already signed up to go on this next trip. Only had 6 last time. But very strongly want to say, if you have thought about going at all, the trip that we're going to do at the end of May and the first couple of days of June is going to be, I think, in quite a number of ways, quite superior to the 3 previous trips that I've already done. I would strongly encourage that, you know, you try and take the time to go if you can, end of May, first couple of days of June. And for instance, on the very first day that you're in the country, all 3 trips that I've been on, well, not all 3 trips, but 2 of those trips, they try, based on the way the airlines fly in and everything, to get you to this little area right here as the very first thing that you really see in Israel. You come off the airplane, you're all kind of jet lagged, and hoping to beat the sunset, depending on what particular month of the year it is. The bus will come in like this. It's going to park either down in this parking lot, kind of out of sight right there, or anywhere else along in here. And then you just walk up this street right here, which is able to take cars, but usually it's just pedestrians. So you come up and go on the top, and you have a number of displays. And you'll be able to see from there really in all directions. The hill does crown right there. You have a 360-degree view. And in a little while, I'll show you some more of this. I don't really think you can make it out from the distance there, but these little white spots that you see over here in the corner are just a little bit of rock that is protruding up through the water and is most likely then remnants of the old harbor of antiquity. Now we've got the new one. You'll see lots of shots of that here in a little bit. But the old harbor, you know, to some extent, you'll see through the water as we go along here, too. And so, lastly, before we get into lesson itself, looking at the verses, I again want to really thank this congregation for the magnificent encouragement that you are to me. I was filled with just a lot of trepidation about getting involved in doing these geographical and historical kinds of presentations here on Sunday nights, really worried, you know, as to how it would fly, whether or not you'd appreciate it. But I've received quite a number of people and very intense appreciation for these lessons. And so again, I just thank you for that. I was really worried about it, being nervous, but it seems to be going rather well. And I just hope that
little by little and at every bit that we can. We can immerse ourselves in the world of Bible times. It does flesh out for you what it was to be an Old Testament saint or a New Testament one, and hopefully bring into sharper focus so many different passages. So we're going to start off with Joshua chapter 19. That's awfully far back in world history, as you'll see on the succeeding chart. In Joshua 19, I just picked out some excerpts here. You see Joshua highlighted. It says there that the seventh lot fell to the tribe of the sons of Dan. The territory of their inheritance was Zorah and Eshtaol. This is only excerpt, so I left out a lot of cities. With the territory over against Java. The territory of the sons of Dan proceeded beyond them, for the sons of Dan went up and fought with Leshem and captured it. Now please note, the territory proceeded beyond them, which is all the cities that we're talking about before. They fought Leshem and captured it, struck it with the sword and possessed it, settled in it. They called Leshem Dan, after the name of Dan their father. This was the inheritance of the tribe of the sons of Dan, according to their families, these cities, with their villages. When we get through the next couple of charts, you'll find out that two of the tribes, when they were allotted the tribal lands as they came finally into the promised land after the Egyptian captivity, were split. And it's very odd to me. I'll show you on an artist's drawing here a little bit, you know, shows the tribal boundaries. But it's very odd. Somehow, tribes got divided, two of them, Manasseh and Dan. So if we look at the general territory of Israel right here, just know, and I'll highlight it another way later, but the general area of Dan is very small and right in this region right here. But they've got one city way up here, right up against the border today of Lebanon, at the foot of the two mountain ranges that are in Lebanon, magnificently majestic mountains, as a matter of fact, that lie immediately north of Israel. And so they went up to Leshem, they captured that city, and they became then this very divided tribe. They had this city in the far north, and it became the milepost for that expression. I think it occurs 19 times or something in Scripture, from Dan to Beersheba. Dan was the northernmost part of the kingdom. So here is where Joppa is in that little tribal area. You know, it's up in the very northern edge of it. Please note that probably in all your Bibles, somewhere back in the midst of time, it became Joppa. Nobody, apparently, in history has ever pronounced it that way except us English speakers. Thanks to English translation. It's Joppa, and sometimes Joppo, throughout history. And today in Israel, it's Joppa. I think I've already told you a little story, kind of humorous, where I got lost in Jerusalem one day just wandering the streets and decided I want to get back to the Joppa Gate, which is the most famous gate, I guess, in the whole city there, and Damascus Gate being the only one other to contend, I suppose. But, you know, so I kept asking for the Joppa Gate, and all I would get from these Israeli and Palestinian speakers was quizzical looks. And then I remembered this, and so I said, Yaffa. Oh, yeah, it's over there. So it's a totally different word. They don't recognize Joppa at all. And then Caesarea Maritima's up here. We'll be talking about that in a little bit. I'm going to argue with Ted's research work a little bit this morning. I went and worked on it again this afternoon. I think we said this morning it was 37 or 38 miles, you know, directly as the crow flies, and from the top of the ancient part of Joppa, Yaffa, to Caesarea Maritima's ruins, and not the general city areas around them, is right at 32 and a half, 33 miles. So it's a little bit closer there. Now, there were 12 tribes distributed throughout that land. The passage we just read in Joshua is from either, and I know it's terrible, there's a 200-year spread, but the 1400s or the 1200s BC. It is difficult to know when that invasion and the promise of that land flowing with milk and honey was fulfilled. And I'm not going to get into all the scholars' debates. I don't think it makes a bit of difference. It took place. We're just not sure exactly when. But an awfully long time ago, well over 3,000 years ago, those tribal areas were established. And as you can see, there's an East Manasseh and a West Manasseh. They have the largest territory. And on the coast, immediately south of that West Manasseh, here's Jaffa, and on this particular map, I don't know whose it is, they've got it spelled J-A-F-F-A, so it's correct there. And then you can also see Tyre and Sidon. And so these are going to figure for us the country of Dan, the city of Dan to the very far north. And we're going to zoom in now and be thinking about Tyre and Sidon in succeeding lessons. But you see the overview there. And so I just want to get a little bit closer. As I've mentioned that Manasseh here had been split. Notice that Simeon somehow got absorbed by Judah. It's just kind of the weirdest thing. They made a donut out of the territory of Judah. No idea why that's the case. But also notice that it would have been nice to be in the more northern tribes where all your neighbors are Jews. The Philistines along the coast here were never completely conquered. Endless problems for Judah and for Simeon. Likewise over here, Moab, Edom, that's to the south, were constantly pressing. You've got Ammonites and Amalekites and a host of others, you know, on the periphery there. But there in the more southern regions is where Dan had its territory as described by Joshua. Now, 2 Chronicles chapter 2, verses 11 through 16, and with a great amount of excerpting, so we're not reading all of it. Hiram, in the New American Standard, we usually say Hiram, used in your Bible, or pronounced, especially the Greek language, as a Y very often. But Hiram then, king of Tyre, answered Solomon and said, because the Lord loves his people, he has made you king over them. Blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who has made heaven and earth and has given King David a wise son who will build a house for the Lord and a royal palace for himself. I am sending Hiramavi, a skilled man endowed with understanding, the son of a Danite woman and a Tyrian father, who knows how to work in gold, silver, bronze, iron, stone, and wood, and in purple, violet, linen, and crimson fabrics, and engravings, and to execute any design, to work with your skilled men and those of my Lord David, your father. We will cut whatever timber you need from Lebanon and bring it to you on rafts by sea to Joppa, so that you may carry it to Jerusalem. Now here's our 12 tribes map again. We've skipped over a large number of years, and it's right at 950 BC now. And so Solomon, whose father was the great King David, is being told by Hiram, who is a king up here in Tyre, that he and the Sidonians, even farther north than modern Lebanon today, both of those cities, are going to be supplying materials so that you can build a temple here in Jerusalem, the first temple. It's a very interesting passage right there to see that David's success in his 40 years as king has spread so far up the coastline as to become very friendly and quite the trading partner with these Gentile nations. They haven't got a thing in the world to do with the Jews. But they're wanting to help, and of course there will be profit for both of them, the buying and selling of these goods. But if you're going to build a structure that takes 7 years, the temple, or 13 for the palace, and you need supplies from a wide variety of areas, you'd come down the coast on rafts with those things, particularly your cedars of Lebanon, Cyprus is going more to the north, to this port, rather than Caesarea that's up above it, because it's a closer distance then for the overland haul to get to Jerusalem itself. So very tiny as Jaffa is, it is the port for centuries prior, really, to Herod the Great, though there was some building before that at Caesarea Maritima. You know, this was the port. It was the only bump on the coastline that had some shelter provided, apparently, by some natural reefs and likely some artificial ones as well. And so there's your Dan, and here's Dan to the north. But remember, the king of Tyre is saying, I've got this guy, and he is just the greatest craftsman you ever saw. And he's the product of an intermarriage between the Jews and the Gentiles. And so now I'm wondering, I'm not sure, probably I would guess, the two parents got together because of the city of Dan being so very close to Tyre. But since he is from that city, likely, may have been from down here, I don't know, he could have had that another way, he's going to know this port, though. These are the people. These are my ancestors. And these are, you know, all my family members. And then there's this outpost in the north that has these close ties to Hiram. And so, in that last passage, you know, we are seeing, I forgot to put the circle there for Tyre, we are seeing that the Jews, in the days of their power and glory, were interacting and trading and signing alliances, and therefore, brethren, having influence over those people who were not Jews. And then, remember, Hiram spoke nothing but good of the God of Israel. And why not? The God of Israel had produced King David. And he was impressive to everybody. And Solomon's going to be so impressive, his son, the Queen of Sheba's going to come to visit with him. Be a light to the world, brethren. And never fear, you know, when you're out working in the world there, you can have astonishing influence with a wide range of people, as these men proved in days long ago. Now just picking up the thread in Ezra chapter 3, I'm going to skip another 400 years, but in Ezra chapter 3, and after the Babylonian captivity, in the first 8 verses, again just excerpts, the people gathered together as one man to Jerusalem. They've come back from 70 years captivity. Then Jeshua and his brothers, the priests, and Zerubbabel with his brothers, built the altar of the God of Israel to offer burnt offerings on it, as it is written in the law of Moses, the man of God. They set up the altar on its foundation, for they were terrified because of the peoples of the lands. They offered burnt offerings on it to the Lord morning and evening. Then they gave money to the masons and carpenters and food and drink and oil to the Sidonians and the Tyrians, who are only 24 miles apart up there, to bring cedar wood from Lebanon to the sea at Joppa, according to the Cyrus, king of Persia's, permission. In the second year of their coming in the house of God at Jerusalem, to the second month, the Zerubbabel, Shealtiel, Jeshua, and the rest of their brothers, and all who came from the captivity to Jerusalem, began the work, and appointed the Levites from 20 years and older to oversee the work of the house of the Lord. Brethren, they're going to do it all over again. And 400 years have passed. The best wood and building material lie in Gentile territory to the north. We need to build an altar. They're building that altar in Jerusalem after the 70 years captivity when Nebuchadnezzar had completely demolished everything that Solomon had built 400 years before. They're starting entirely over. They're starting over again, trading with the Gentiles, bringing in the best material, getting started with that altar, even though they're fearing some of these surrounding nations 400 years later. They've still got ties to Tyre and Sidon when they return from the captivity. Where's it all going to meet? In Joppa, as they is the port that they bring all these materials into. So there again is Tyre and Sidon up in what is now modern Lebanon. Here's the Jonah we were joking about just a minute ago, but in the first 3 verses of Jonah, we don't know when this event took place. Nineveh existed for hundreds of years, hard to place the timing of this, but the word of the Lord came to Jonah the son of Amittai, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, the great city, cry against it, for their wickedness has come up before me. But Jonah rose up to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. So he went down to Joppa, found a ship which was going to Tarshish, paid the fare, went down into it to go with him to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. Well, of course, everybody here knows the story. And this is the picture, particularly, that'll help us to appreciate the great antiquity of this port. The whole Mediterranean lies before you when you come to Joppa.
here's the area where we have what little there is of archaeological remains from ancient Joppa, but right on the crest of the hill, right there. But you can see under the water all these rock outcroppings, you know, the darker parts all around that little protrusion out into the Mediterranean are remains of previous materials used for those harbors. And you can see those rocks I mentioned earlier, you know, where they're just barely poking up, you know, out of the water right there. But as you can see also, it is a really pretty little city. And I don't know if there's an area in Eugene or not that's like this. Sometimes you think of various cities. But what it has become, all these buildings down here, is an artist's enclave. So don't bring your credit card, because it's real tempting. When you go down there, you have all kinds of artwork that's being sold in all these various shops. So I'd like to ask James Cheers and Lane here. I guess she's not here tonight. We had a break. Where's James? There he is. Okay. You know, we had kind of a long break, as I recall. Did you go down to the waterfront? Okay. Well, I did too, and I think the path I took was down through here. And then you go through these just channels of 3 to 4 story buildings on cobblestone walkways that wind just down, you know, through the warren in there with all the pottery shops and whatnot, you know, to look at along the way. Eventually, you come down to the waterfront, and then I walk all along here and past this long building that you see overlooking the harbor itself. Did you get down into that area too, James? Okay. Then I walked through here, and there was a band set up. Did you see the live band that was going on right there? And so it's quite the, you know, entertainment that area too. Everybody likes to come out there, you know, for in Japan and botany. And then I walked also all the way around over here to the breakwater itself. Did you make it that far? Didn't quite get that far. In a minute, I'm going to show you an event that took place right there in the corner of that building. But you know, brethren, it's just, there's something about being there. Of course, we'll get to Acts in just a minute. This is an extremely important city, and it had been for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years before it, for over 1,000 years. And so that little port right there is the location for all the shipping in the Mediterranean that's coming into Israel, all of it's overstating it, but for much of it, you know, throughout all of these centuries, and is still to this day, many of the ships that you'll see in here are larger craft that are used for shipping, for fishing. So again, I want to show you this gray building right here. And then you can see it there as I had come down to the waterfront itself and was looking back, you know, across it right there. The ships of antiquity, brethren, you know, for, of course, a trade would be much larger. But these small craft are not all that different to this day from what's been used for eons in Israel. And you don't need a whole lot of a harbor to be able to get shelter, you know, for smaller craft like that. But you can see how crowded it is. I mean, a hard place to find a slip. It's too bad you didn't go a little bit farther, James. I've lived much of my life in the company of Arabian horses. My mom and dad were involved with purebred Arabians. And I came across this Arab sitting on, guess what? An Arabian horse. If you know anything about the Arabians, they have that classic dish face. It's just gorgeous, you know. And so my mom, as a matter of fact, had several animals that looked just exactly like that. He was riding back and forth, you know, on the cobblestones and whatnot. So Israel is a surprisingly friendly country. They're pretty open, despite all the problems they have, I know, you know, to meeting and being friendly, you know, with strangers and all of that. It's been the case, I guess, throughout antiquity. They wanted to trade with the world around the Mediterranean Sea, and they still do. Okay, coming back to the text in Acts chapter 9, verses 36 to 43, you can tell that's a lot of verses, and I will get a little bit on the screen, but we come now finally to the New Testament. In Joppa, there was, in chapter 9, verse 36 of Acts, a disciple named Tabitha. We'll be hearing about her in our class next week. In Greek, called Dorcas, who continually did deeds of kindness and charity. Have you developed that reputation yet? Are you renowned
for the good works that you do? Is there a reputation that's just radiating out from you for all of the kindness and charity that you've been involved in? Well, I hope so. And if not, let's be working on it. But it happened that this good woman fell sick and died. So when they washed her body, they laid it in an upper room. Since Lydda was near Joppa, the disciples, having heard Peter was there, sent two men imploring him, "Do not delay in coming to us." So Peter went. They brought him into the upper room, and he knelt down, prayed, and turning to the body, said, "Tabitha, arise." She opened her eyes, saw Peter, and sat up. He gave her his hand, raised her up, and calling the saints, presented her alive. It became known all over Joppa, and many believed in the Lord. And Peter stayed many days in Joppa with a tanner named Simon. We have absolutely no idea where that was, but it's not very far outside what you see in that picture. You can tell it's a very small area there, always has been. Somewhere along the shoreline, there's a tanner named Simon, and Peter takes up a residence with him, renting a room or some such like that. And that because in the tanning process, there is a lot of chemical waste that is typically being done down by the sea. So it can be washed away and taken away, you know, by the action of the ocean. So not surprising to find a tanner by the sea. Most of them trying to locate themselves there. And for many days, Peter lived here. He raised a woman from the dead here. The knowledge, you know, of Christianity is radiating out from this little area right here. It's pretty nondescript. It's not very big. There could have been very many saints to begin with, and Peter, of course, is chief among them. But wherever you live, and in whatever circumstances you live, and with whomever you associate, because they looked down on these tanners. It was an unclean occupation that they were involved in. The Jews, you know, would have all their airs of superiority and conceit, you know, in putting these guys down for being involved in that activity. But Peter's associating with the lowly, as we are told to do in our New Testament, and from this area then, that gospel is going to be going out. Lydda, is modern-day Lod, is just straight out there to the east, about 11 miles or so, which isn't far at all. Happened on one occasion, being there as we typically were at the sunset, to be standing up on top of that hill. My guide says, "Okay, everybody, turn around and look, you know, and just look over there." And now, do you see those lights coming on? It's getting darker. There's Lydda. Okay. And so it is close. They are able, the people at that time, being on foot most of the time, to traverse a distance like that, you know, very readily. They're very, very fit. They're built all their lives for walking. I try to keep myself in some shape because I do a lot of walking when I'm in Israel. I did a 12-mile hike just last Tuesday. You know, I did a 12-mile hike. And it takes me 5 hours. But still, that's a near city, and they would be able to do it in a single day, I'm sure. They'd send James. Hey, run over to Lydda, you know, and let's get some help over here. So that event, you know, then takes place, and Peter, you know, is called out for this good deed. Now, come to Acts 10. In this case, I'm not going to put the verses up on the screen as we close out the lesson. These are the last references to Joppa in your Bibles. This will be material, again, we'll be talking about probably 2 weeks from now in the Acts class. But as we look at the first 8 verses of chapter 10, there was a certain man at Caesarea named Cornelius, centurion of what was called the Italian cohort, a devout man, one who feared God with all his household, and he gave many alms to the Jewish people, prayed to God continually. About the 9th hour of the day, during the afternoon, then he clearly saw in a vision an angel of God who had just come into him and said to him, "Cornelius." Fixing his gaze upon him, being much alarmed, he said, "What is it, Lord?" And he said to him, Your prayers and alms have ascended as a memorial before God. Now dispatch men to Joppa. Send for a man, Simon, who is called Peter. He is staying with a certain tanner named Simon, whose house is by the sea. These are just the next verses after the story we just read. And when the angel was speaking to him, when the angel who was speaking to him had departed, he summoned two of his servants and a devout soldier of those who were in constant attendance upon him. And after they had explained everything to them, he sent them to Joppa. Now, this is going to be about a three-day journey. Next day they're on their way, and then, you know, you have events unfolding. We're just going to skip to chapter 19 and verse, or chapter 10 rather, verse 19. While Peter was reflecting on that famous vision you all know, the Spirit said to him, "Behold, three men are looking for you. But arise, go downstairs and accompany them without misgivings, for I have sent them myself." Peter went down to the men and said, "Behold, I'm the one you're looking for. What is the reason for which you've come?" He said, "Cornelius, the centurion, a righteous and God-fearing man, well spoken of by the entire nation of the Jews, was directed by a holy angel to send for you, to come to his house and hear a message from you. So he invited them in, gave them lodging. On the next day he arose, went away with them, and some of the brethren from Joppa accompanied him. On the following day he entered Caesarea. Now Cornelius was waiting for them, called together his relatives and his close friends." And then that event, of course, unfolds. It's repeated in Acts chapter 11. Joppa's going to be mentioned there again. And we have the first time that the gospel is presented to a Gentile in a very, you know, conscientious manner. It took the miracle of the vision to give Peter the insight. He had realized that this was, you know, not just exclusively for the Jews. And so the gospel then begins to grow. So once again, this is that little city. It's not quite due west from Jerusalem and the northern end of the Dead Sea. It's just a little bit, you know, north of there, of course. But above it, as I showed you earlier, is Caesarea Maritima, about a 30-mile journey. Well, that's a 2-3-day journey. So there's some turnaround that's involved in these events. But Caesarea Maritima now, in the New Testament, has far eclipsed Joppa. It has been the great port, you know, throughout the centuries, though some building had been done, and there has a rival up here. Herod the Great comes in, he starts building, his harbor is magnificently larger than Joppa's is. It's brand spanking new. It is the most expensive materials that can be found in the entire Roman Empire, and much of it remains today to be seen. It is my personally favorite site, you know, in all of Israel. So much happens there, of course, throughout our New Testament. And so here it is, 32, 33 miles apart, that these men are going back and forth. Coming, and this is the oldest picture I could find, Peter is coming from that city. Now, in 1895, do you see that there really isn't any breakwater then? What have you got? Well, it really looks to be just natural rock structures. Those don't look to me like they've been, you know, worked much. And so we have modern breakwaters today. In the old days, it was a natural feature. And then, of course, when Herod had unlimited funds, he just, you know, took over up in Caesarea. So there is, you know, a couple of fishermen out in the harbor, such as it was in 1895. Here is a shot that's taken up on the green area, which is the park area that you'll see if you go on a typical trip. And then here, as we come to the end of our lesson tonight, is a view from the beaches of Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv stretches on for miles. You know, it's got everything you're in, and surfing and whatever else you want to do there. But here at last is probably the best picture of how far it is that Joppa sticks out, you know, from the straighter coastline itself. You see that spire that we talked about so much. As we close, brethren, just want to say, that's a wonderfully appealing little town. It's just fun to be there. it's cozy and it's friendly and it's clean and it's got a lot of history, you know, and it just, you know, it's constantly buzzing with activity. It's just a really fun place to hang out. What a day. Have a good time through there. It just is. It's just, you know, if I could retire and have, you know, a little 3 or 4 story room, you know, one of those buildings, I'd have to think seriously about living out my days in Yapa. Isn't it pretty? Brother Jim's better. And it's better incomparably so. There are a lot of places in Israel really pretty. Now, the United States has got vastly more gorgeous territories and physical features. Where the gospel starts is with work. Where it begins is with soldiers and tanners renting a room and fishermen like Peter and people like you and me. I stood on that beach time and again. It's the last place you also visit before you get back on the plane, because it's so close to Tel Aviv and the airport. So James will remember we went to the Tishrin and had the meal there. That's just outside of town there, but in that area. You know, and brethren, so many times I've stood on that beach as you walk down to the beach from the restaurant and look out across the length of the Mediterranean Sea and ask myself and pray, have I really given myself to the service of my King like those fishermen did all those years ago, who would set out in horrifying storms and shipwreck as Paul did, who would be taken in chains from Yaffa and Caesarea, you know, under Roman confinement, who were willing to do anything for their Lord so that they could go to a better home, a much friendlier place, a much happier place, one that is free forever of all the travails and illnesses and weaknesses and injuries that we have to suffer. Go to Israel, brethren. It'll change your views of Scripture. Go to Israel, see its beauty, you know, and thrill to the history. But come back and go to work. Work out your salvation with fear and trembling, Paul told the Philippians. And then let's all go home together, where it's going to be a lot better than a view of Tel Aviv and the Mediterranean Sea. Let's go home together. If you're not a Christian, now please become one this evening. If you're wondering about it, please ask to study with me, one of the elders, or some other in this congregation. If we can help you with prayer or personal Bible studies, if there's anything that we can do, let it be known.